Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Wes Moss, and I am here to help a million people retire earlier while enjoying the adventure along the way. To reach that many folks takes the work of more than just me or one person, and I have a fantastic team behind the Retire Sooner podcast, and I've decided to bring them in to help address some of the questions and topics that you've sent us. You're about to hear from my team members with answers that can hopefully help Americans retire sooner and happier. And I'd love for you to be one of them. Let's get started.
Welcome to a new episode from the Retire Sooner podcast. Today, I am so excited to have Joel Dean here with me. He is a certified financial planner and an investment advisor here at Capital Investment Advisors. He is an integral part of the Retire Sooner team. So for anyone who likes to listen to our daily market updates, the Money Matters Minutes, if you will, Joel happens to be my very favorite author of these. His analogies for how the market is performing always crack me up. He writes them over to us, and it just always makes me smile anytime I read them. What is one of your better quotes from those?
Let's see. The most recent one was when the S&P 500 hit a record again. It was like 7 days in a row, and it was another one.
Yes.
Another one from DJ Khaled.
DJ Khaled!
The one that you, I think, were particularly tickled with last year was in the throes of the market meltdown during the pandemic.
Yeah.
There were some, as the market is wont to do, some of the best days in the market follow some of the worst days. And so there was a really volatile week where the market would be like down 2% and then up 2.5%. And I was writing the weekly recap, and it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was a tale of two cities.
That perfectly encapsulated it too. Well, when Joel is not acting as a financial advisor and when he is not writing these daily updates, you actually can normally find him spending some time volunteering with the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not a complete saint. I do have a family and friends that
I also that
spend
too.
Time with. But
that's fine.
But yes, but no, absolutely. Yes. I'm on the board of directors of the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta, and it is a wonderful organization here in the area that that touches a lot of families' lives and a lot of people who really need help.
Well, can you tell our listeners what this group does? I had never heard of a nonprofit that did this. And so the first time you told me about it, I remember just feeling so moved that people actually had this resource. It was something that you don't think about, but it's so needed.
Yeah. So the Furniture Bank, the mission is to make sure, and I might be butchering this a little bit, but the mission is to make sure that every family has a place to lay their head at night and have the furniture they need. So they work with, their clients are families who are fleeing a domestic abuse, right? An abusive relationship, or maybe transitioning out of homelessness, coming off of the streets. And they have a place to live, so they've taken that first step, but they don't have the means maybe to quite furnish their house. I don't know if you bought a house recently.
Yeah, not too long ago.
It's not cheap to fill it with things, is it?
No, it takes years, actually. I got my house a couple years ago, and I had a couch that had previously been, let me see, in my playroom growing up, and then it followed me to college, and then it followed me to my next apartment, and then it finally followed me to this house. Actually, I know there was another house or two in between there too. And anyways, that thing, by the time I finally was able to replace it, I'm pretty sure like the springs in it were totally busted. It was like sagging in the middle. And I finally had to go and buy a new couch, but it was not cheap.
Okay, so I'm glad you didn't give the couch to the furniture bank because they take lightly used furniture.
Yeah, this one would not have worked well for them.
So what they do is when those families are transitioning into their new home, it doesn't really feel like a home yet, right? It just kind of feels like shelter. What makes a house a home is, you know, sitting down around a dinner table or sitting on the couch, having things on the coffee table. Obviously, having a bed is hugely important, you know, especially if you're a child, right, for finding some semblance of normalcy. And so what the furniture bank will do is if your couch had maybe had half the lifespan it had before you needed to get rid of it or before you wanted to replace it, then the furniture bank would have been able to come and take that couch and bring it down to their warehouse and then give it a second life, a second home to a family who needed it for them. So they'll take lightly used furniture and they'll give it a second home. So rather instead of ending up in a landfill or something like that, it gets put to use.
I love that. It actually kind of reminds me of The Blind Side. There's one point whenever the main character, whose name I'm blanking on, anyways, moves in with the family and she sets up a bedroom for him and he walks in and he goes, "I've never had one before." She's like, "What? A room to yourself?" And he was like, "Oh, a bed."
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a real, that's a real issue that families deal with that I don't think a lot of people even could conceive, right? Yeah.
It's
true. Maybe not having a bed to themselves, but maybe not having a bedroom to themselves, but maybe not even a bed at all. The organization actually gets double points because the folks that they have driving their trucks, you'll see them around town. Actually, they have the big green Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta logo on them, but those are actually veterans who were out of work, unemployed, and they actually hire them, get them their CDL license or get them their warehouse license to where they can operate forklifts and things like that. And they'll work for the furniture bank for a time and then be able to go and have the skills needed to find another career. So it's pretty neat.
That is. Yeah. That is really cool. That's an amazing group. I'm so glad that you're like tagged in with them. And Joel does a great job of trying to incorporate capital into a lot of the activities that those guys do too. So really appreciative of that. Now, if it's not obvious already, Joel Dean clearly has a big heart, which is part of the reason I wanted to talk with him today about something that I think we're hearing a little bit more and more of each day, which is this idea of investing along with your beliefs, or maybe it's the opposite of that, and investing in the sin stocks.
Yeah.
Why are we hearing about this? Why is this in the headlines that much more these days?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a breakdown between an individual maybe that has certain beliefs that they want to either further by investing or maybe stay away from. And then there's this concept that you're probably referring to that's really headline and making waves, big ones in the investment industry, and that is ESG investing.
Yeah, that is exactly what I want to talk about. But Before we get into that, I do want to how often do you see people coming in and actually choosing to invest in a company because they like what that company is pushing and promoting versus when they come in and they say, "No, I don't want to put any of my money towards that stock or towards that company. I don't want to support them because I hate what they're doing and think they're ruining the world."
Yeah, it's maybe a little bit of both. It probably spread evenly.
Oh.
I'll tell you two, just off the top of my head, recently had two client experiences that probably fall under this conversation. The first one was a client who really did not want to invest in any cigarette tobacco companies, right? So tobacco companies, there are a couple of really large ones. They're well capitalized, obviously have a means of getting recurring cash flow. It helps when your product is addictive.
Yeah, you want to talk about a sin stock right there.
Right. And so, in a big dividend payer, right? And so it had the fundamentals for a company that we would have invested in. But this client had a personal experience. Their parents were both smokers. Her parents were both smokers and passed away from lung cancer, right? And obviously it was a different time, right? So, tobacco use was much more prevalent, but still, I mean, that was...
Heart-wrenching?
Yeah, I mean, it would be difficult, certainly. And so she had requested not to invest in any tobacco stocks, right? Because she did not want her capital to be used to further the interest of a sector or a product that she felt, you know, helped end her parents' life, essentially.
That makes a lot of sense.
On the other side, though, I mean, probably a little bit more optimistic.
We love optimism. Happy retirees are optimists.
Yeah, so we'll focus on that, on this then, and maybe how clients can do this part of it. Is a client who really had a strong belief in the EV, electric vehicle space. And he really wanted to invest in some companies that otherwise probably would not have met our criteria, right? But he had conviction.
What does EV mean? You gotta remind me.
Electric vehicles.
Okay. Yeah. Keep going.
So there's a huge movement in that industry as well to move towards electric vehicles. But there are a couple of startup companies that the client really believed in and had invested in and have actually done quite well for him, which is great. But that is just a space that that he really had conviction in. And he was willing to sacrifice potential gains elsewhere, or even losses, recognized losses, right?
Oh, wow.
For allocating, you know, his nest egg or a piece of it to companies that maybe weren't quite so established, which is generally the area where a retiree would play in a more established company.
So like a greater risk. He took a greater risk because he believed in these companies so much.
Yeah. He was prioritizing one of his core values, right? Or one of his beliefs for above or at least equally to just simply making more money or the return that it could deliver him.
That makes sense. So flip side of this, you've got people who are investing because they believe in something. You've got people who are not investing because they don't believe in something. And then what about people who don't really care about that as long as they get a return?
That's probably where the average Joe generally sits. Most of our clients, I would say, don't have any strong beliefs. Their number one priority is to, you know, enjoy themselves in retirement, be a happy retiree. And that comes from having peace of mind, right? And having security, right? Because that's going to enable them to find fulfillment. And so oftentimes it's finding companies that are going to be able to deliver them the cash flow they need in retirement. They're healthier companies, maybe reduce volatility, manage risk, things like that. And that's really what they care about. They care about their personal experience or their personal retirement goals over maybe some social or environmental boxes. You know what I mean?
So I want to bring it back around to ESG. You got to remind me, what does that stand for?
So on its face, ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance.
Oh. Right?
But really, what it is it's a form of investing that adds in a layer of social responsibility, right?
Hang on. Social responsibility. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So the idea being that companies have a higher calling than just delivering returns for shareholders, right? Or maximizing shareholder value, right? They should also be beholden to, you know, our planet or our social justice issues or how their boards are even managed, right? So who's running the company, right?
I mean, wow. Wait. So is this, and this is, how popular is this movement?
Very popular, actually. So I was actually looking at a Morgan Stanley study, right, on sustainable investing. Okay, so 79% of individual investors expressed interest in sustainable investing.
So did you just say 79%? Almost 80%.
Yep.
What?
Yep. So, in true millennial form. 99% of millennial investors said that they had an interest in sustainable investing. And I think it's important to note here, right, that this survey was from individuals with over $100,000 in investments. So it's not just some bleeding heart, you know, trading on Robinhood, right? Trying to save the planet, right? Like these are real people with real money that are saying, this is important to us.
Oh my gosh. I mean, because, you know, you say a millennial investor. I'm thinking of, like, you know, like some kid who's like open, like you said, a Robinhood account. They threw like $100 in. And like, you know, if they're trying to tell me that like I only want to invest my $100 in a company that cares about the environment, you're going to blow it off really fast. But you're telling me these are investors with over $100,000.
You're right. Yeah, that is what this study was based on. So
99% of those folks are trying to say that they care about this.
Well, 99% of millennials.
Oh, wait.
So,
okay.
So 79% would be all generations, right?
That's a huge segment. So, yeah. Well, then what are the companies doing in response to this?
Well, so I mean, companies really have, I probably don't need to tell you this, right? But companies are becoming more and more active politically, socially, you know, philosophically, right? You know, it's becoming almost hip, I want to say, but also probably profitable as well for these companies, because I think there is a real movement. I mean, if you look at our society, we are becoming a little bit more engaged, right, with what's going on around us.
Yeah.
We're not as private anymore, and these companies and their beliefs aren't either, right?
That's fair. I mean, it makes sense. I guess everything is just a quick Google search away, so you can quickly find out if, you know, that clothing company that you love that maybe like produces a ton of clothing really fast, let's say, is actually creating a ton of waste and, I don't know, using labor practices that you don't like.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in fact, I was looking at this before coming in. It's such a big deal to these companies that pretty much every major business has some sort of sustainability initiative.
Wait, really?
Yeah. I mean, so some of them have entire websites built out for what they're doing on an ESG front, right?
Wow. Can you give me some examples?
Yeah. So Johnson & Johnson, for example, and I just use Johnson & Johnson because it's a huge American company that spans a lot of industries. They have a 47-page report on the company's diversity, equity, and inclusion review.
Wow.
Okay. That was one report on their sustainable website.
Wow.
Okay. Microsoft's environmental sustainability report is, guess how long it is?
I'm going to, like, 10 pages?
Higher.
20?
96 pages.
Oh my gosh.
I thought my computer literally froze when it was downloading it.
Oh my gosh.
It just like stopped.
I believe it though.
And I was like, what's going on? It was just downloading it. It took so long and it was chock full of graphics and charts and images and what they were doing. So, I mean, you know, it's a big deal to these companies.
It makes sense to me that as long as it impacts the bottom line that they would be caring. But I guess the real question is like, do you believe them? Do investors believe them?
Yeah. So funny enough, there's kind of a term for that, right? Because it has become kind of a catch-all, right? And so, you know, once something becomes a trend, everybody wants to be involved in it, right? You don't want to be that company that's not, you know, that's insensitive to something or doesn't care about the planet, right? I think we all know now that is not going to win you any favor or probably win you much business in today's world. So there's probably a tendency or it opens the door for companies to maybe fudge a little bit what they're actually doing. There's a term called greenwashing, which means that you are essentially faking or inflating what you're doing from this sustainability standpoint or from some social standpoint.
That makes sense. And also, I love that term, though, greenwashing. I'm just envisioning like a white picket fence that like somebody like threw some green on it and called it good.
Robert here with a quick answer to a question I heard recently. What is an IPO, or an initial public offering? So an IPO, or like I said, an initial public offering, is where a company that's owned by private investors or a family, for example, comes to the public markets for capital. So basically, a company that's been run by, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith for a long time decides, I no longer want to own this, or I want to get an investment from the public markets. You do something called an IPO, and institutional investors purchase a piece of your company, and then it trades on the open market like any other stock in the S&P 500 or Dow Jones or things like that. But the first step to take a private market to the public markets where individual investors like you and I can buy it is an IPO.
So let me bring it back around to, I have to know, how does this come back to performance? How does this impact it? You know, obviously, you know, you've got these big groups insisting on moving to ESG. Mm-hmm. You've got, on the flip side, you can also invest in an index fund that follows these sin stocks, right? Does one of them perform better than the other?
Yeah, so we had fun looking this up, actually. So when you, the answer is probably a little bit to be determined, but not a huge degree of moving the needle from an ESG standpoint. So when we were looking at least for what we were looking at, and we were looking at the ESG index, right? And there is a fund, that an iShares fund actually, so a BlackRock fund.
Interestingly enough,
that really I looked at the correlation to the overall market, the S&P 500, right? So this is an index of companies that meet some sustainability criteria, right? The correlation to the S&P 500 was 98.8%.
Sorry. I feel like we keep giving out these high percentages. 98.8.
So basically 99%.
Oof.
It was the correlation to the overall U.S. market. So, you know, I don't know if that's a function of just ESG's become such a catch-all. Maybe there's too many companies greenwashing in there.
Oh, don't say that. Hopefully they're actually doing the work.
I say that a little tongue-in-cheek. But I mean, really, the largest companies already are already pretty sustainable, I mean, I would imagine, right? And so,
yeah.
And really, if you look at the S&P 500, it's pretty concentrated at the top. So
that makes sense.
So it's a lot of the same companies driving the same returns.
That makes sense. And I will say, I think a lot of the companies that are at the top are all, from a culture perspective, internally kind of push these more green narratives, if you will.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so the performance, I guess, on ESGU, which is just a proxy for an index of ESG companies, year to date is almost identical to the S&P 500. Going back 2 years, there's an outperformance of 6%. So I mean that's pretty good, but it's relatively new fund, right? It only goes back to 2017. So
just 2017.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize this was so new. Is that when this really started to pop up?
ESG, I'd say, really has been the wave has been growing, probably over the last 3 or 4 years. When we were looking at the sin stocks, right?
So, we gotta give some examples of what's in there, because that just seems like fun.
Yes, yeah. The sin stocks are basically everything you would want to do on a weekend away from the kids. So it is alcohol, it is gambling, it is, well, tobacco. The only thing that you might want to stay away from are the weapons.
Hopefully.
Maybe don't mix those first couple with them, but really, I mean, it's probably a little bit more, right, of what it's sectors or companies that folks might view as taboo a little bit more.
So it's essentially a weekend away in Vegas.
Or yes, with firearms.
I think they have those out there too.
I think you nailed that. I think weekend in Vegas is pretty good with firearms. So if you go back and you look, there was actually a pretty prolonged period of outperformance So from 2006 to 2017, actually this basket of SEN stocks outperformed the market at large every year but two.
Wow.
Yeah. And then
so people like the SEN stocks.
People liked the SEN stocks, or they were performing well at the very least.
Okay.
Since then, though, since underperformance in 2018, 2019, 2020, I haven't looked at it year to date. That would probably be something that would be worthwhile. But three straight years of underperformance, and I don't know.
That's an interesting, because it seems like that time frame fits a little bit with what you were saying with ESG becoming a little bit more popular.
Yeah, I don't know if that's causation or if there's legit correlation there, but certainly it seems like there's been a counterbalance, right? That as ESG has become more popular, as people seemingly willing to put their money where their mouth is with how they invest and line up their beliefs, it's kind of come at the expense of some of these other less friendly or less open names.
That's interesting. Well, so what you're telling me is that when it comes to making your choice on whether or not to invest based on your beliefs or based on fun, let's say, performance really can't be a factor. It seems like it's a little too up in the air still.
I think there's a feeling growing that there's naturally going to be outperformance by the companies that are doing the most from an ESG standpoint, right? Now, should that be your main decision maker? I don't. The answer is I can't answer that. And I don't think you can either, just because people seem to be willing to allocate capital to their beliefs all the time. It's just generally in the form of like a charity or a church or a school, right? So we give money, but we don't really have an expectation of return. Maybe you should take that approach if you feel strongly about a company that you do want to invest in. I'll take it back to the client who is big into the EV space. I mean, kind of out on a limb, some of these companies really weren't making a lot of cars or even turning a profit, and they might not for years, right? So could there be a realistic expectation that he never made money in that? Yeah. But did those companies need his money? Probably. And would they have been able to succeed without it? No. So you might be rewarded, you know, going out in the future for taking this style of approach, but I think you really need to understand what's most important to you.
All right. So I need to know then. I need to know. For our Retire Sooner audience, you know, they are probably like, they're thinking about retirement. They're in retirement. They're in this like this area where they care. They're clearly investors. How much should they factor in ESG? How much should they invest based on their beliefs or based on, you know, finding the right, maybe it's companies that are part of that SEN stock and fund, you know, how much should they worry about that?
I don't have a good answer, Mallory. I think it's going to be dependent upon the individual and really how important that is to them. Personally, I think that a happy retiree, I think their time is the most valuable thing. I think that's what they should be worried about, and that's where they're going to make the most impact, not whether or not, you know, maybe holding one of their funds doesn't line up with all of their beliefs personally. So I think you take that time that you might be worried about whether or not everything you're invested in is ESG, and you go put it into something where you can see a real tangible return.
Oh, I love that. I love it. Like the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta.
Or just so it doesn't sound like a huge commercial or any other. What's your favorite charity, Mallory?
Oh, great question. So I adopted my cat, my sweet pumpkin spice latte, love of my life, from the Atlanta Humane Society. And I actually adopted her on Halloween for free. They were doing a little giveaway. But I've ended up paying probably a lot more for her over time because I give to them monthly. I love those guys.
Yeah. So I think that's the best outlet for somebody's time if they really want to find something that lines up with their core values.
I love that. Well, listen, Joel Dean, as part of the Retire Sooner Network, we love to talk about happiness. So, because we know that life is about a lot more than just money and finances. So I need you to tell me, what is one thing that has made you happy recently?
we talked about it earlier. I got to see my baby really for the first time last week, and that was just really exciting to be there with Adrian, my wife, and see baby Dean. So it was that, and then my other son, Joseph, he's about to turn two, and he started preschool last week, and he just did amazing. Got such a great report.
I am not surprised.
He had so much fun, played nice with the other kids, got minimally sick. And so
I hear that when you have a 2-year-old, you just expect to be sick all the time.
Especially when they are surrounded by other 2-year-olds.
Yeah, makes sense.
So I was really proud of him for getting in there. It was his first time really in that new environment, and he took it all in stride.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciated this. This was very interesting.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. It was a unique topic, so I'm glad we were able to cover it.
Agreed. Hey, y'all, this is Mallory with the Retire Sooner team. Please be sure to rate and subscribe to this podcast and share it with a friend. If you have any questions, you can find us at wesmoss.com. That's WESMOSS.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and YouTube. You'll find us under the handle Retire Sooner Podcast. And now for our show's disclosure. This is provided as a resource for informational purposes and is not to be viewed as investment advice or recommendations. This information is being presented without consideration of the investment objectives, risk tolerance, or financial circumstances of any specific investor and might not be suitable for all investors. The mention of any company is provided to you for informational purposes and as an example only and is not to be considered investment advice or recommendation or an endorsement of any particular company. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. There is no guarantee offered that investment return, yield, or performance will be achieved. The information provided is strictly an opinion and for informational purposes only, and it is not known whether the strategies will be successful. There are many aspects and criteria that must be examined and considered before investing. This information is not intended to and should not form a primary basis for any investment decision that you may make. Always consult your own legal, tax, or investment advisor before making any investment, tax, estate, or financial planning considerations or decisions. Investment decisions should not be made solely based on information contained herein.